everybody. Laura Ingraham here. And whether you are absolutely thrilled with my political point of view or you hate it, that doesn't matter. Because for my new weekly podcast, It Ain't Political. This is all about the culture, parenting, education, the madness in Hollywood, the few bright lights on the horizon, and what we can do maybe to turn it all around. I'm going to have fascinating guests from the entertainment, media, journalism worlds, from the stage, from the big screen, from the music industry and beyond. Great writers and thinkers, doers. People have actually done something, not just talkers. And we've had enough of those, right? Including this one. So we're going to have a lot of fun, and I look forward to doing my all-new weekly Laura Ingraham podcast. It's coming soon exclusively from podcastone.com.
The following program is a podcastone.com production.
Welcome to Ron Paul, the weekly podcast. I'm Charles Goyette. The war party has stumbled on the road to Damascus, with voting put off on Capitol Hill and Russia seeming to act like the grown-up in a world of John Kerry's and John McCain's. Senator McCain's frustration with the delay is evident, and that is to be expected. Somebody published a map recently showing all the places McCain has wanted to war. There are 13 in all that includes Syria, Iraq, Russia, North Korea, and 9 other nations the Arizona senator has been eager to bomb, invade, or destabilize. Is war off the table or just off the table for now? Ron Paul's thoughts right after this.
How would you like to do something that's good for you and good for America? From now on, when you're going to shop on Amazon, go to the podcastone.com Ron Paul page and click on the Amazon link there. When you do, a portion of whatever you buy gets kicked back to the Ron Paul Show to help keep the podcast coming and keep us from having to run tons and tons of ads. So we can be selective and focus on getting you Ron's message. So do it. Go to podcastone.com, click on the Ron Paul page, click on the Amazon link. You'll be glad you did.
Dr. Paul, the warmongers seem to be genuinely surprised at the public resistance to opening up a new front on the never-ending war in the Mideast. I have to admit, I'm a little surprised by it, too. It could be that more people have listened to your message over the years than we ever realized.
You know, I think it's very interesting and very hopeful, because the war propagandists of all nations have always been successful. And it just might be that the tide is changing, and maybe the internet is helping us. Maybe it's the failure of all the wars and the failure of the economies that the people are starting to question this. But I think it's really wonderful. You don't know how much, though, is partisan politics. I do know that there were Republicans that opposed Clinton when he was bombing Bosnia. And they were the warmongers as soon as Bush got in. There's a little bit of that going in. But basically, the Republican warmongers were very anxious, to get involved and do the bombing sooner and much more deliberate. But now it looks like the American people, and maybe the people of the world, are waking up. Just think, the parliament vote in Britain, that said that the people weren't ready. I don't think the people are ever ready. But the politicians and the governments always have the propaganda tools, and they put out the war propaganda, and they're always successful. Scare the people, paint the enemy as the devil, and make sure they hate their enemy. And this time it didn't seem to work. And it might just be maybe Obama's heart isn't in it. I keep hoping the best for people. Maybe he did have a soft spot in his heart and really doesn't like war, like he said in the campaign. But I think what might be going on now is once a person gets in office, they are dependent on a lot of very powerful special interests, the people that are referred to as pulling the strings. And maybe those individuals are trying to go against the grain of what Obama, actually feels in his heart. Now, that's just pure speculation, because we've seen Obama going into Libya and different places. But right now, he sure has been hesitant. He sure has been ambivalent. He sure has opened up the doors. And sure has given the Russians an opportunity. So there's a bit of irony in this. But hopefully, it's not pure demagoguing and politicking as much as a change in sentiment. Most people say it's impossible. The wars have been going on for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, and nothing is going to change human nature. And I have this, sneaking feeling of hope that maybe people can change. Maybe the whole world can change, because the world is so young. When you look at the history of the world, 5,000 years that we've had recorded history. Maybe we will take technology and intelligence and advancement, instead of using it always to fight and kill each other, maybe the people will have something to say about it and restrain the politician. But that can only be done if they come to an understanding that they can't ever grant arbitrary power to the executive branch of any government. And I think our founders tried to do that and even said they can't go to war, and it failed. But it must have to be even more rigid restraint on the executive branches of all governments, at the same time giving a louder voice to the people who have to fight these war and pay for these wars. So we might be, and I hope we are, witnessing something very great in history to see this happening. It certainly was a big issue in Britain when the Parliament voted against war, and it's a big thing now that in many ways this vote, we who have advocated peace and diplomacy, and even though we didn't win a vote, we did win a vote, the vote of popular opinion, which has made the president back off a bit. And hopefully we'll see only good things come of this, but we still have a long way to go.
It was interesting that it took Vladimir Putin, the president of Russia, to wag his finger at the American people and say, you realize, of course, that Americans are not seen as a model of democracy around the world, but as a country that relies solely on brute force. Well, yes, that's what we've been saying.
You know, and it's also interesting for those of us who actually remember very clearly the Cold War, and I was in the service during that in the 60s. And I really believe, you know, the bad guys were over there and we were the good guys, and we had, you know, the rightness on our side, and yet we still had to be worried about that. So we had that position. And I think it was more true. It certainly wasn't, we were far from being perfect, but I think it was more true then than it is now. And we were trying to restrain Hitler and Stalin and all these thugs, and even China. But now here it is. We're the ones that are invading, believing in preemptive war. We violate our people's civil liberties. We torture people. We assassinate our own citizens. And then we get lectured by a Russian president. So it is interesting times. And I just hope that, you know, it wakes us up and opens up the door. You know, the big thing was that there was some careless statements made both by the president and Kerry, and then Putin jumped on it. Well, Putin might be making some careless statements now about his boldness for peace. And what we should do, instead of the McCain and the Lindsey Graham's getting hold of this and saying, don't believe him, we have to go to war and drop the bomb sooner, maybe we ought to just throw it back in Putin's lap and say, you know what? I think you're right. This is what we should be doing, and you're a man of peace. So let's embark, you know, on peaceful exchanges. The only thing I'd be a little bit hesitant about, since I don't have a lot of faith in an international government body like the UN, I think we could have this discussion without the UN, to tell you the truth. And I think that would be healthier, that everybody does it in their self-interest, to have a cause for peace for the benefit of their own people. But I don't think you need government bodies, because whether it's the UN or the WTO or IMF, I think they still do like governments do. They serve the interests, the benefits of the special interest, and that won't be our answer.
Well, it was entirely predictable, given the reluctance of the American people to open up a new front in the unending war. It was predictable to see the major news organs, the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, trot out the old canard about isolationism, and they looked as though they were trying to outdo one another with the number of times they could call non-interventionism isolationism. And so help me, it seemed to fall flat like it has never fallen flat before.
Yes, because I think we're getting the message out also that those who call us isolationists are the ones who won't even consider free travel to Cuba and trade with Cuba. And they're the ones who put the sanctions on Iraq, and hundreds of thousands of children die. They put the sanctions on Iran, pretending they're going to overthrow a government, and only the people suffer, and even the dissidents who would like to improve their government. So that all backfires, and then they call us isolationists, but they're very much so. And then They also follow this old-fashioned idea of mercantilism, that we have to go over there to protect our oil and our natural resources. But I see continually the Chinese are investing in Africa while we're stirring up trouble and invading different countries in Africa and the Middle East. So even though there seems like there's been a flip in positions with us and Russia, there's a little bit of that with China as well, because they still call themselves a communist country, but they have a lot of capitalistic ideas, especially when it comes to banking. They're doing a pretty good job there and earning profits and saving money, so they know a little bit about that.
One of the problems seems to be that the American people have been asleep at the switch, that they have been willing to turn over not just foreign affairs, but obviously monetary affairs and fiscal policy to these graybeards, these poseurs, the wise men of Washington, the governing classes, and to trust that they know what they're doing and that they'll take care of everything. And then when the people do open their eyes and look around, we're in a heap of trouble.
Yeah. You know, and their assumption is that people can't do it for themselves. Some people won't take care of themselves. And there's some truth to that. And some people will mess up. But why should you let the worst rise to the top? As Hayek points out, you have a system like ours where you reward people who say they're going to take care of this and put only good people at the head of state. That means then everybody suffers the consequences. The others, when you put more confidence in the people, of course, a lot more things happen for the care of the people. And the few people who do abuse it, they're the ones who suffer, not the whole country. So this whole notion that we can put people in government and they can take care of us from cradle to grave economically, they can make sure that we have no vices and that all vices become crimes, and they will legislate this, and then they apply that same principle overseas. And I think this is what Putin was sort of lecturing us about on our exceptionalism. What makes us so exceptionalist? He considered that a dangerous idea. Ironically, I've considered that a very dangerous idea, because it reminds me of Neo-Jacobins. The Jacobins were the ones, of course, who operated the French Revolution, and they were good people, and they wanted everybody else to be good. Of course, if you didn't obey them, you usually got your head chopped off. And I think Putin didn't say those words, but I think that's what he was pointing out, that we think we are so great. And of course, my answer to that is not too complicated. I think in some ways over the years, we have been exceptional in many of our qualities, but we failed in thinking that you can force other people to accept it. The only way you can be an exceptional nation and practice freedom and liberty and sound money and free markets, if you do it and you set a good example and you have others emulate us, I think that's the only way it can be of any value.
Dr. Paul, with the tide of public opinion running so strongly in our favor, could or should we have pushed for a vote on Obama's war resolution so that Congress would at least clearly be on record against it in case the White House starts getting its dander up and preparing to launch again?
You know, I think it would have been interesting. I would have loved to have seen it. We do know a lot, because some have committed and some have already flip-flopped on their votes. And those people who remain undecided are obviously the ones who are only committed to figuring out which way the wind's blowing by putting their finger up in the air. But if they had to have a vote, I think it would have been more significant than the votes that we have had, you know, over these over the last decade. And a lot of people say this was a wonderful thing that we finally had Obama going and getting this vote, and that's what he's supposed to do under the Constitution. They're giving him a pass. But, you know, Bush went and got some type of endorsement, and they always won the propaganda game. So this is not unique to eventually go. But what they miss is this is war. It's real war. And if they should be fighting, want to fight these wars, they should make a declaration of war. But a clean vote could have been, very interesting, and it would have had a lot of political significance for next year.
All right. Well, your impact on the public shift on issues like this simply cannot be exaggerated. Thank you, Dr. Paul, for another great conversation and podcast. Ron Paul, the Weekly Podcast. I'm Charles Goyette.
This concludes another PodcastOne.com program.